Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Matt Peck is out today. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369, our text and voicemail line. If you want to hit us up, anything that we talked about earlier in the week, I know Matt hit mailbag yesterday, so if you had any lingering thoughts going into the weekend, hit us up there, 331-979-1369. Our episode today is sponsored by Built Bar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. So instead of listening to me jabber on by myself for 30 to 35 minutes today, I thought last night I would reach out to a good friend and somebody who's been on the show for a couple times now, a former teammate of mine at The Score, Tony Gill, and coincidentally, a podcast had just dropped that he had been working really, really hard on over at NBC Sports Chicago. So I definitely want to get into that with him. Wanted to talk to him about The Last Dance and also a little bit about the current Bulls. So bringing in Tony Gill. Tony, how are you?
What's up, Jordan? I'm glad to be here, man. It's been a minute since the last time I came here. So I'm definitely excited.
I was going to say, I think it was pre-COVID-19, pre-shutdown, all of that, the last time I talked to you. I've seen you pop by The Score once in a while before everything kind of got locked down. But yeah, it's been crazy last 3 months. Obviously, The Last Dance coming out, that has been the talk for the last 2 months. That's been what you've seemingly been working on for the last 2 or 3 months now. I know what Matt had mentioned to me a couple of weeks ago. He's like, yeah, you know, after episode 10, a lot of us over at NBC were like, I don't know, I'm kind of feeling a little bit of The Last Dance fatigue. And he asked me if I was feeling it. And I was like, man, honestly, since I didn't live through this era, this last 10 weeks of hearing all these different stories from everybody has been an absolute thrill for me to listen to. So I can't get enough of it. How did you feel after the 10 episodes and working for the last 3 months nonstop talking about this 10 years of the Bulls dynasty?
I mean, it's better to talk about the good times than the current bad ones, right?
That's for sure.
But I mean, it's been nice to just kind of get the details and the context of everything that went back in the high point of the Bulls era. And we kind of skimmed through it and just celebrate like, oh man, it was a great time. But to actually go into, well, why was it a great time? And the people that were involved and how those individuals interacted with each other. It was enjoyable to see and enjoyable to watch. And just reliving that also with my father, I watched every episode with him and having him relive where he was at various moments in time. Like it was definitely a fun kind of bonding session with me and my family personally. And I'm glad that we were able to experience that together for those 5 weeks.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I was working The Score all 5 weeks that they were released, but I was going back and forth in a group text with my mom and my dad, and they were huge, massive Bulls fans in the 90s, like basically everybody else here. So they were dropping me like little anecdotes that were happening, and I would say, I can't believe this story. And then my dad would fill me in a little bit more. And I remember like after the 10th episode wrapping up, I had such disdain feelings for everybody just absolutely trashing Krause the way that they did. Some being deserving, some maybe not so much. But I was just like, I can't believe some of the people that are should get part of the blame for breaking up the entire dynasty are getting away scot-free. And, you know, my dad, the classic Chicago sports fan, is like, nah, Krause broke him up. Don't feel bad for Krause. You know, this was, it made it look like he always got made fun of and all of that, but he made some moves that screwed the Bulls over. So I guess a lot of Bulls fans may have felt like that back then when they were watching it live. And to us, we get kind of a different perspective because we didn't actually live through this. Through those 10 episodes, though, was there a moment or a story that kind of has stuck with you over the last, I don't know, what has it been, 2 weeks now? Almost 2 weeks without any new episodes. Has there been one story throughout all of the 10 hours that you watched that you're like, damn, I can't believe I didn't know that before? That's kind of like mind-blowing that we're not talking about that more than we should be.
I don't think it's any one particular story, but the thing that sticks with me is just how Michael viewed all of this and how he experienced all of this, and getting at least more than we've ever have an in-depth look at the person that is Michael Jordan, and just having a realization that I don't know if it's cool to be like Mike. You know, just to see all the mental strain that he went through. And, you know, thinking about, is he really happy as an individual? Like his happiness seemingly being dependent on dominating other people in any form or fashion that suits him. And then having that taken away. And now it's kind of like, is he truly, truly happy? And the depths that it takes to win as much as he did, the many stories that corroborated that thought in my mind. The way he treated his teammates, just the ability to just kind of make up things and lie to himself to get himself, you know, to that next level. Like, it seems like a strain to be Michael Jordan. And a lot of those stories that we saw in the documentary really kind of corroborated that on how he views things. And it seems scary to put yourself in that mindset, like constantly, like, oh, who's out to get me, or who do I have to get next? Like, that's a tough way to live. And I don't know if I could live that way.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I feel like at a lot of times, especially that what was shown in the documentary, the devil on his shoulder that was, you know, chirping in his ear constantly, seemingly was somebody he was almost best friends with in a way, which was himself, because he was battling back and forth. And that's what seemingly drove him the most. And I found that fascinating too. And I'm like, Reggie Miller and all of these guys can talk in MJ's ear, battle him back and forth, but at some point that doesn't get him going. So he needed to turn to himself to make up all those stories like you were talking about. I found it amazing, even though a lot of people are criticizing the fact that MJ had full control of this. And my answer to that is, of course he's going to have full control of this. He's probably the most recognizable, the most, he's definitely one of the most wealthy athletes of all time. He's going to control the narrative he has since day one. Similar to kind of how LeBron has told his story, which I find interesting, and see how that leads us down the road. But thinking about The Last Dance too, this is something that I couldn't quite get Matt's perspective on, just because he had lived through this era already and knew so much about and lived and died with those 90s Bulls. So I wanted to see if I can get your take on this, because I had two examples that came to my mind as I watched all 10 episodes. I felt like the director did a great job trying to manipulate your opinion on certain situations and thoughts, getting you to project either a certain plot line or a certain character, player, coach, whoever in this documentary, to twist it to their narrative, whether it be good or bad. Is there one that comes to your mind that you are like, holy crap, I didn't know that, or I feel this way about a certain player, or this way about a certain storyline, and then you went back and did some research that was kind of left out of the documentary or skimmed over, and you're like, oh, wait, it didn't really happen like that. I'll give you an example for mine. Scottie Pippen portrayed as a baby portrayed as selfish. I kept telling Matt consistently throughout the podcast, throughout those 5 weeks, I'm like, damn, dude, I did not know how selfish Scotty was in some of these instances. And, you know, I saw a lot of beat writers go out there after the fact, and it's like, I don't know why the documentary highlighted two or three of his biggest mistakes of his entire career. Outside of that, he was nothing but a saint, but they kind of projected him as a baby or selfish. Did any of that come up for you where you're like, holy crap, I didn't know about that about this, and have a different opinion than maybe somebody who lived through this era?
First to your Scotty point, like how I viewed it from the jump, which didn't really skew my opinion on it after it was done, and like just kind of the common complaint about it now was everybody was surprised that this was like a Michael Jordan documentary. And I wasn't. Like, I was fully prepared that this documentary was in the framework of the Bulls, but this is coming from Michael Jordan. Like, this is the viewpoint. This is how Michael viewed his entire tenure with the Bulls. And we should have been prepared for that. Like, it was not a Bulls documentary. It was a Michael Jordan telling of the Bulls documentary. Even though Michael said in the documentary, quote, that you can't mention Michael Jordan without Scottie Pippen, which is high praise, but also the actions and how it played out in the documentary showed you a peek into how Michael felt about Scottie in those specific situations. And not highlighting the fantastic season Pippen had without Michael. They didn't do enough on that. They kind of made it like a team thing, but Scotty was the one leading that team. And yeah, he had the, you know, the 1.8 thing that they, you know, magnified and highlighted. But to Scotty's point on that specific one, he was having an MVP type season. So it's like, would you do that with Michael? And I get Scotty isn't Michael, but to Scotty's point, he's like, I'm having an MVP season and you're not going to give me the ball at this. You're not going to trust me in this moment to make that shot. So I understand it a little bit. And also like the misunderstandings about Jerry Krause, I think is
a storyline that is
interesting, and to be able to get more context from that situation, because I think people, it's easy for us as human beings to make everything black and white when most of life is gray. And I think same thing goes with this situation with Jerry Krause and the Bulls, that I think they broke up because of a lot of different factors, including Jerry, obviously, Krause. But Reinsdorf is in there. Phil is in there. Scotty's in there. Michael's in there as well. Like, all of this came to a point where it wasn't going to work anymore for all parties involved. And to make it just flat out blaming one person for the majority of it, I think is wrong. And it has, and with the context of what we have been provided and with the memoirs that that are soon to come out on Jerry, that Casey Johnson was trusted with to release in parts during the documentary, which is fantastic. If you haven't read those, please go back and read that on NBCSportsChicago.com. It wasn't all Jerry Krause. Like, a lot of things, if Michael doesn't have this hostile work environment that he initiated, if Phil doesn't get worn out or doesn't, you know, if Scotty's contract situation is different and he's locked in to a better deal long term, like, I mean, if Reinsdorf isn't looking for an out to not pay for an expensive, like, a lot of these things matter in how that ended, and it isn't just one person's fault. So for me, the Jerry Krause storyline was probably the most interesting one throughout this whole thing.
Totally agree with you on that. I wrote that down as my second example of this, is the idea that Jerry Krause was kind of cast as this cartoon character that everybody made fun of all the time, when in reality, you listen to any of the beat writers that were there every single day, you even listen to Sam Smith talk about it, it's like, it made it look like Jerry Krause was just getting bullied day in, day out, every single day. And he's like, that's not really how it was. There'd be off jokes, but Jerry Krause would be firing jokes right back at guys. So he said, it's a different tone and context than maybe the way that the documentary perceived it. But there's also moves that Krause and things that Krause said too that weren't highlighted in there that I don't think put him in the most positive light. But I totally agree with you, is the documentary kind of progressed and we got to those last three or four episodes, and especially that last episode with the last 15 minutes, there was a whole lot of, wow, Jerry Krause gets blamed for breaking up the dynasty. But if you're asking somebody who's taking a mild, very neutral perspective on this, it doesn't look like he deserves every single drop of blame. Like you were mentioning, Jerry Reinsdorf, I think, gets away with a lot of, skates by with a lot of lack of, I guess I would say, criticism or blame for breaking up the dynasty. I guess you could look at it glass half full too, right? And say, hey, what happens if Reinsdorf does bring these guys back? And what if the Bulls get embarrassed in the first or the second round? Or Michael Jordan gets hurt, and that's the way that you remember the dynasty, as opposed to it went out with them winning the way that they did in the final chapter. And same thing with Phil. Like, you could tell, like, even listening to all the beat writers that were there again telling the stories, that Phil was checked out. He was ready to go. That was it. He knew it was it, and he wasn't coming back, and he was fed up and done with Jerry Krause, and they were just tired of bickering. And then the final part that, like, even if you could buy into the idea that Michael was going to come back for another year, Phil was going to come back for another year, Dennis Rodman was going to come back for another year, they don't get rid of Steve Kerr, that the biggest hurdle was Scottie Pippen, I think it would have taken a lot more to get Scottie to sign a contract, and it would have been a lot of maneuvering by the Bulls, if you look at their salary cap, to actually sign Scottie there. So, I don't know. The idea that Jerry Krause got all the blame, and the worst part is that he wasn't there to kind of defend himself. But I did hear maybe even Will Perdue say it. He said that it's almost maybe a good thing that he isn't here, because, you know, he had such a mentality to want to defend himself, and, you know, it might have made things even worse. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, like, it's all about what type of environment is being portrayed. And it starts at the top. Reinsdorf could have set a better work environment for that group and shut it down early. And say, hey, we work together as a cohesive group. We've been successful. That's what strong leadership is. When you are the boss, you are the man, you are the head honcho of that organization. And if you sense that there's any animosity or things aren't working out, or if you notice Michael is, or Scotty is belittling your GM, you got to say, bring them into your office. Like, hey guys, he is a key piece to this organization. Like, give him some respect. Like, I love you guys. You guys are staples to this organization. But lay off Krause and give him some. Like, he could have shut that down as easy as anybody in that organization to create a better overall working environment that works. I mean, it's not like it couldn't have worked. Like, we've seen other organizations not take this kind of hostile route. Look at San Antonio. Look at Golden State. Like, dynasties can survive without animosity amongst, you know, the organization. And I just thought that they were either too egotistical or too lazy to kind of get to that nuanced situation.
They were so ready to just be done and over with. And it's like, let's try and prove that it wasn't necessarily just Scottie and MJ that can continue this legacy going on. And, you know, there's stories that were filed after that are like, Krause had plans to sign Tim Duncan and to get Jermaine O'Neal, and I think Tracy McGrady was a part of that, all these big time free agents, and they were lowballing him at the time. They were ready to come to Chicago, and yet the Bulls didn't want to pay them the fair value. They felt like the franchise's value was worth more than anything. And that brings me to today's era of Bulls. I don't know if it was just me, or if you thought the same way listening throughout these 10 episodes and the way that some of these interviews went. A lot of it can be paralleled to the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years of the way the Bulls kind of conduct things still. So I made it with, you know, the idea that the Bulls brand is worth more than paying you what you were worth in your contract, or, you know, not wanting to keep guys that they should, like contract disputes like Jimmy Butler's made me think a lot about when they were going back and forth with Pippen. Just a lot of little things made parallels to the current day Bulls. Did you feel that at all?
Yeah. And I felt that because of the situation and the way the organization has acted post those championship years, it's kind of like karma. You know, it's like if you're not going to, you know, create a better environment in your organization to constantly review, upgrade, and update the practices that you're doing, you deserve what you get. And for the Bulls, they deserve what they got. They got a lot of mediocrity with a little blip with Rose, and then into more mediocrity. And I'm glad that they've taken notice. Like, it's been a long time coming, and actually bring in some outside people with different ideas and thinkings to run the organization now. But why did it take 20 plus years to get this done? Like, I mean, for a business, like, I mean, you don't do that. If you're owning and operating a business, you're always constantly looking at how can you keep up or get ahead of your competition, which in this case is the other teams in the NBA. And the Bulls didn't do that. They were kind of in cruise control. It just felt like that they wanted to win only on how they thought that they should win, and not what the rest of the NBA is doing to win. And it again, like I said in the beginning, it felt like karma when you look at the way the Last Dance ended, and just the sheer, again, I keep bringing up the work environment because I think it's so important to have that type of fertile ground for growth that wasn't there. That wasn't there. Nobody was getting hired from the Bulls organization. Like, that should be a sign. If no other team wants to pilfer from your organization, that means you're not doing anything correctly. So why would anybody want to hire somebody from your organization? So, yeah, you're right. All those thoughts, the Jimmy contract, the way Derrick Rose's tenure ended, like the way they've handled players and situations and teams since that time, it's just been a repeat of the same things.
It's well put, the karma thing. It's like, yeah, it's like the Bulls idea, if they were, consider the Bulls Portillo's, and it's like one day Portillo's just decides to say, you know, we're done selling beef sandwiches and hot dogs and fries. We're going to sushi, and we're going to tuna sandwiches, and we're going to kettle chips. That's all we're selling. And at first, and they'll be like, yeah, I know it sounds weird, it sounds crazy, but believe in us. You loved us before. You believe in the Portillo's brand, so keep coming back. And at first, people would. They would go and try it. But after a while, you're like, I don't want this. This isn't the Portillo's I remembered. This isn't the Portillo's I loved. This is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. This is what I came here for. So eventually, people stop going. And I feel the same, the way that all of a sudden became a ticking time bomb for the current Bulls, is people just stop showing up to the United Center. And, you know, believe it or not, a lot of people want to say that that doesn't have a huge impact. Well, over the last 18 months or so, you really started to see the Bulls fans stop showing up to games completely. And I think that put a huge red flag for a lot of people, is, you know, the last thing you want is this team to become completely irrelevant. And that shouldn't happen in the biggest market that we have. I don't want to spend the whole episode on The Last Dance, and I promise we won't, but I want to get to your new podcast that you just dropped. Before I do that, want to mention to our listeners about Built Bar. Built Bar has sponsored every single one of our shows in the month of May, and we appreciate Built Bar for hanging on with us for the entire year. So they're going to be a sponsor of the Locked On Bulls and the Locked On Podcast Network for the entire year. You can get $10 off at BuiltBar.com using promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Right now, till the 31st of May, they're running an additional $5 off when you buy a box. So you get $5 off a box plus our $10 promo code. It's 50% off your order. So go try it now at BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. So tell me about Sports Uncovered. I know about a month ago when I bumped into you at the Score, before everything got kind of locked down, and this might even have been before that, I was asking kind of what you were working on, and you were telling me a little bit about this, but then when I saw the promo a couple days ago for it, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. So I listened to the first episode that came out. It's called Sports Uncovered, NBC Sports Chicago. You were like, I figure you were kind of like the maestro of all of this. You were the conductor of all of this, and you had basically all the same. And you were the narrator. By the way, I have a bone to pick, too. It says hosted by Mike Tirico. It should be hosted by Tony Gill.
Now, Mike is he's the voice on all the episodes. So I just got this one. So he's going to be he's leading charge. And we got to build off that name, man. We got to cash in.
That's true. That's true. But tell me about the series a little bit, and more specifically, the episode that just dropped today on specifically the I'm Back facts.
Yes. Yeah, so Sports Uncovered is a NBC sports property that brings together all of our regional networks. So Chicago, Washington, Northwest, Bay Area, all of the different RSN, we call them regional sports networks. We're all contributing to the series. We get one episode per season. And we were fortunate enough to be the first episode to premiere the entire series, our episode, I'm Back, focusing on the Michael Jordan famous facts that he sent before returning the first time. After he retired in the 90 after the 93 championship. So again, Mike Tirico is hosting it. So check out his stuff. He's got a podcast. But yeah, I got an opportunity to work with a lot of people on this project, and I got hired at NBC around December ish. I can't remember the day exactly, but it was definitely in December. And they had already plans on doing this topic. And they hired me to kind of put it all together, put the pieces together, make it sound good, and just kind of executive produce it along with executive producer Ryan McGuffey, who was heading the entire project. And I mean, they had an idea, and my very first day was the day that we got the interview with Tim Anderson that uncovered all of what we got a chance to uncover, which was the Golden State Warriors secret practices that Michael was a part of. That was my first day. So after that, we were kind of off and running. Wow. So it's been a fun project to work on. It's a lot of long nights, a lot of, because of the pandemic, it made everything a bit more complicated on how we got this done. There's, you know, times I had to record in my closet to voice track a lot of this stuff. But from what I've been hearing from the people that have listened to it, they really enjoy it. And I really appreciate the feedback that we've gotten so far.
I don't want to spoil it completely for anybody, but some of the interviews that you guys were able to get, specifically just thinking about two, the biggest gripe I had with The Last Dance is that they didn't interview people that, or at least it didn't make it to the documentary. They didn't interview people that were there day in and day out. And two guys that you interviewed were Mark Giangreco and Mark Silverman. And I thought their accounts of covering MJ during the I'm Back facts and like leading up to those days of finding out when he was actually returning were fascinating. And I think a lot of people, maybe it was glossed over a little bit because people had already known a lot about the story. But to me, things like that were fascinating. And I was also telling you too, and anybody who's checked out Tony's work before, Behind the Headlines, you did an entire series for the score with Judy DeCaro about James Jordan, the death and murder of James Jordan. So that was fantastic, fantastic series. And I was telling you, it was like an audio documentary, and it was a fantastic listen to. So anybody out there, go check it out. But what was the most difficult interview to kind of wrangle, and how long did you spend grabbing all of these interviews? You said since day one. So since day one till about May, it took you to grab all these interviews, conduct this, and put this all together?
Luckily, I was able to hit the ground running when they hired me in December. They have already been working on it for a little bit, in preparation for the 25th anniversary of the facts, which was back in March. So Ryan McGuffey, Matt Buckman, Michael Allardyce, Sarah Locke, Danny Wysocki, they had already had like a couple interviews in the can already when I got there. What I kind of came on as we were getting the Warrior stuff, like at the exact same time we started to uncover what really happened in between time of Michael practicing with the Bulls and him leaving baseball was the sweet spot of what we wanted to get to, and we got to it. The hardest interview to get was probably LeBron because we tried like every angle possible to kind of get him in a room one-on-one, and they just kind of just shrugged it off or didn't see it or just said no to all the different ways we tried to get LeBron. And the only way we could have got him was, luckily enough, during the All-Star weekend, it was in Chicago, in the media scrum. It was only about 17 minutes. Ryan McGuffey just hounded that table where LeBron was going to be at and just staked it out, got his questions in, and LeBron obliged. Like, he was really into that question and wanted to speak about how Michael influenced him and his particularly and his community, as LeBron said. So getting that one was probably the most difficult one. But other than that, I mean, once we sent out, you know, teasers and trailers to the guests that we wanted to, everybody was open to wanted to discuss that time period because they, you know, they haven't had to in a while. Steve Kerr was excellent. Rod Higgins, the executive in for the Atlanta Hawks, he was so prepared to talk about that time. Like, he by far, for me, gave us the best interview overall. His memory of the details of those Warriors practices was crazy insane. And I definitely appreciate his time. So another kind of like thing that was missed that I wish we could have gotten was the head coach of the Warriors, Don Nelson. He lives in Hawaii and he runs a marijuana farm in Hawaii. So, and we were prepared to fly down to Hawaii. Everything was full go to interview him about why did he allow Michael to participate in their practices. For those couple days that Michael was there in the Bay, but the pandemic stuff just kind of took that off the table immediately. So maybe we'll get the Don Nelson interview later down the road for like the Bulls Talk podcast or something. But that was one that I wish we could have gotten.
I remember seeing a Real Sports maybe about a year ago on Don Nelson, and it talked all about his life after basketball, and they followed him around, went to his place in Hawaii. It was fascinating. I didn't know a whole lot about him, the entire podcast was an awesome listen to, so I highly suggested Bulls fans will definitely be eating it up. My last dance question for you, then we'll get into just a little bit about the current Bulls, and then we'll get out of here. The amount of interviews you guys did for 2 or 3 months just blows me away, and the amount of interviews we were able to get the score was amazing, and, I feel like being a producer at times can be a thankless job. The chase is part of the reason why I think I like being a producer the most, is the rush that you get of being able to chase down somebody for an interview and finally getting that person, or booking somebody and then they saying something crazy that grabs a headline or ends up doing something. Those little things I think have kept me around. But the people that you guys interviewed, Craig Hodges, Dave Robinson, Scott Burrell, obviously the guys at your TV station, Will Perdue, Kendall Gill, you guys had Michael Jordan's son, BJ Armstrong, Bill Cartwright, which he didn't seem to be doing a lot of interviews, which was an awesome listen to too, just among the handfuls of ones that you guys did. Is there a response from anybody that you were doing interviews with across or producing any of the episodes for the Bulls Talk podcast that kind of blew you away, a question that was responded to and you were like, holy crap, I did not know that, or something that you're like, wow, anything that comes to mind?
A person that you didn't mention, and obviously he's like not, you know, the biggest name or the biggest draw, was Jason Caffey. We interviewed him a couple weeks ago, and he had a very interesting take on his time as a Bull and just his overall NBA career that I think, if you haven't checked it out, please do. It was very interesting because he talked about his mental health during that time period, and just the different struggles that he went through while being on a championship team. Like, he got the privilege of being on the championship team, playing winning basketball right from the jump to start his career. But he was going through a lot. A lot of things were affecting him as he was being seemingly, you know, super successful. So I think he mentioned specifically about how he was raised and how it affected him when he became an adult and in the NBA, having, you know, multiple children by many different women. How did that, you know, affect his stress, his mental welfare, him being I don't want to misquote him, but just as many different issues with different substances and stuff like that. It really, really brought out like the other side of that 98 Bulls team that, yeah, along with the success, there were people on the team dealing with stuff. And Jason Caffey was one of them. So if you haven't checked out that interview, please check that out. It was definitely eye-opening into a time where we all gleaned, you know, happiness from, and he does too. He enjoyed those times. He enjoyed playing with the Bulls. I mean, he still talked to Scotty and all those guys and still has respect for Michael. But for him, it was a different experience.
I'm going to have to go back and check that out. I have his name written down among like Tim Floyd and Kobe White and Jamal Crawford, which Jamal Crawford is a great listen to. Anytime he's on a podcast talking about anything, I think he's a fascinating listen to. But I think the most powerful one you guys did for me listening throughout all of those was Craig Hodges. And Craig Hodges did a bunch of different interviews all over the place. But the one he did with Layla Rahimi, I thought was amazing. And just some of the things that he said were super powerful and talking about kind of the opposite side of the Bulls dynasty and some of the other things that happened. So the repercussions of things that came out throughout The Last Dance were just mind-blowing to me. And a lot of people already kind of knew some of these stories and knew some of these fights. And then obviously, too, like the Horace Grant stuff was hilarious. And I know it's probably not great for Horace to relive any of that. But to me, for me and for anybody that's in this business, it's great content. And it's still great to hear that there's still fire and passion between the two of those guys damn near 30 years later. Tony, before we get you out of here, we got to talk about current day Bulls stuff because a lot has happened since the last time I talked to you. First question, how many success plates do you give the Bulls for the moves that they made this offseason?
They get a lot of credit because this is a thing that we didn't think was possible from this, you know, ownership group. And they did it. They went out of their comfort zone and did it. And I know it's a long time coming. And I know Bulls fans are like, what took you so long? But hey, they're here now. They got new people in. They've already made moves to change the organization to a better situation. Hey, I mean, this is a new era for Bulls basketball. So I know it took a long time, but they got it and they're ready to move forward. And I think fans should be really excited.
I'm so damn excited, man. I'm so excited. It's been hard watching it. And you know, as well as anybody, watching these games for the last 3 or 4 years, just been, it's been tough. It's been very, very tough. Mm-hmm. What do you think the possibility is of seeing a playoff Jim Boylan?
Very, very low. When Mark and AK got hired, they made it a point that they're going to talk to everyone and leave no stone unturned about why this organization was suffering like it was. I think they are doing that and have doing that. And according to Casey Johnson, they're finally making their way to what he reported today. They're finally making their way to Chicago to get to meet, you know, everyone face to face. But I think that they've done their due diligence even beforehand, before meeting anybody in person. Just in my opinion, I just don't see any scenario where Jim Boylan is returning as head coach. And Jim's a nice guy. I've had my personal dealings with Jim, and all of them have been cordial and very respectful and professional. I don't think he's the right guy at this time for the Bulls to move forward. And one thing that sticks in my mind specifically was when Mark Eversley did his interview with KC, and when he did his first media interview, he made a point to say, we're going to make the Bulls cool again. We're going to make being a Bulls fan cool again. Does Jim Boylan ooze cool to you? I don't think so. And just the way the players didn't perform, I don't think, to the best of their abilities under Jim Boylan, I just don't see a scenario where that happens. I'd be really, really shocked if Jim Boylan stays as the Chicago Bulls head coach.
Damn, I'm going to miss him, though. I keep telling Matt that. I get it. I don't necessarily think he's the fit for a coach, especially this. It's time to just clean house, wipe the slate clean completely. But I'm going to miss him as a producer and somebody who just thinks he's entertaining. I think regardless, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Sports are entertaining, and Jim Boylan, I will tell my kids about Jim Boylan and how entertaining he was 20 years from now. So, the last thing I have for you, NBA plan. Going to Disney. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to Disney? And what do you think about that plan? And shifting the schedule too seems like that might be permanent. What do you think about that?
I've been to Disney one time, and it was fun as a kid. Went to Universal Studios, all that. I should probably go back just to see what, you know. Once everything,
it's probably so different since the last time you went.
Right, yeah. I think I went when I was maybe 13 or so. I'm 27 now, so yeah, it's been a while. But hey, it's easier for the NHL and the NBA, in my opinion, to try and work something out because their seasons were nearly over anyway. It's much more difficult for football and baseball to figure out their plans because their season didn't even get a chance to start yet in 2020. So quarantining themselves for just a month or so, just for the play, if they did just do the playoff teams, it won't be as daunting as a, you know, 5 month quarantining from your family if this was baseball or football or something like that. So I'm glad they're working towards a solution. The Orlando plan, I have no problems with it. I think safety always should come first. And it could be devastating if they come back too soon, don't take the right precautions, don't have the right amount of tests available to actually do this, and then somebody contracts it. And now we're even in a worse space than what we were before, because now you put these players and these people's involved and their families at risk because we need sports. And as you've seen on Twitter just today, there's stuff out there that's bigger than the entertainment of the masses, you know. And I know it would kind of help soothe some of this and gives us a nice distraction if sports was back, but there's a lot of real life stuff that's going on. I know I'm in no rush to even though it would benefit, you know, it would benefit all of us if sports got, you know, restarted. But this is just me talking. Personal, the health and safety of the citizens should be the number one priority, and because they're people first. They're not just entertainment figures for our enjoyment. Like, no, these people have families. These people have grandmothers and great aunts and older folks and just people in general that they come in contact with on a regular basis that they could be possibly putting in at risk by trying to do their job too soon. So as long as all the safety precautions are taken and as long as this is taken seriously by the players, not like, you know, what Rudy Gobert was doing before this kind of just got crazy, I'm okay with it. But again, as long as the safety of the players and their families are put first.
Totally agree with you on that. And yeah, sports is, I think, has all of a sudden become very low on the totem pole of things that are more serious than what's going on in the world right now. You know, it is a nice distraction, especially because a lot of us have been stuck at home for so long, but you know, there's a lot more important issues out there right now. And I'm with you, man. Safety is first and foremost. My dad was a paramedic and a firefighter for 34 years. My brother's one right now having to deal with this here in Illinois. And I mean, they're still talking about here in Illinois, in our state, that the peak won't be till the middle of June. So yeah, if they can be safe, and Disney's certainly big enough. I was listening to Keith Smith talk about how big Disney was. He worked there for 20 years before he covered the NBA, and it's just massive, man. So if they can figure out how to keep not only the players safe, the coaches safe, but the people that are going to have to work these games too, and you know, the things you don't even think about, take care of the players at the hotels, all of those people too that are able to be safe, it would be nice to have it back, so... I think that's it, man. So wait, last question. So does that mean that you're you're not in favor of the Bulls flirting with the idea of trading for Rudy Gobert?
No, no, we're good. We're good on all bigs here, man. we got enough to work with. Rudy, if there's a chance to get Donovan Mitchell, which I know will be extremely tough, because why would you want to trade Donovan Mitchell? But yeah, I'm good on Rudy Gobert and that contract.
Yeah, I would say about the same. Tony, this has been great. Again, go listen to Sports Uncovered, the new podcast about the I Am Back facts. Tony did a amazing job with it, and everybody else at NBC Sports Chicago. Tony's voice you'll hear throughout the episode as well. So it's fantastic. Listen, go give it 5 stars as well. Give Tony a shout out too if you're on social media, because it's wonderful. Follow Tony too on Twitter. Are you at Tony Gill?
At the Tony Gill. I had to switch it up because I was at Tony Gill 670 when I was verified, but obviously I don't work for 670 anymore. So it's I had to make it generic. At the Tony Gill.
I was making fun of Mike Chen because his, before he had to change his too, before he got verified, was like with like 7 numbers. And I just, every time he was asking people, I would just tell him, do something with like 15 numbers in it for me. We miss you over at the Score, though. Everybody there misses you. So, but you've been doing a great job, man.
I miss it.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, do you miss being a radio producer?
I do, man. Every day, like every day, having something new to talk about. I mean, and I talk to Lawrence a lot, and we agree that this would have been my time to shine with no sports, just go out and be as entertaining as possible. This would have been a fun time for me to produce that show every day. But yeah, man, I mean, radio is my first love. It's the reason why I wanted to get into the business. Unfortunately, you know, this opportunity came up, and it was kind of just too good to kind of pass up. But yeah, man, I miss the banter. I miss the callers. I miss the texters. I miss radio. I miss you guys. Like, yeah, like if there's another opportunity that I could be a radio and join radio again, man, I would love to. But I'm loving where I'm at right now at NBC. They take good care of me over there and allow me to create and grow and do a lot of different things. So it's a good time. But I love radio, and I try and listen to you guys as much as I can.
Yes, I got the opportunity to fill in on Lawrence's show on Friday of last week, and we had one hell of a segment. He was talking about basic injuries and like old man injuries. And I don't know if you took a listen to it or not, but we had a guy call in about private sex parties, naked pool parties he was having, and another dude with a possum problem. It was wild. So we miss you, though, over there, and keep killing it, though, at NBC Sports. And make sure anytime you see or hear from Matt that you mess with him a little bit. And we definitely got to get you back on the podcast more often. Hopefully the next time we talk to you, we got actual basketball to talk about, and hopefully something good with the Bulls.
Yeah, hopefully. It seems like we're on that trajectory. But yeah, hopefully.
I think so. All right. Thanks, Tony. Again, go follow Tony. Go listen to Sports Uncovered and give it 5 stars. Thanks again, man.
All right. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate you, man.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks again for Tony Gill for joining me, so you guys didn't have to listen to me drone on for, I don't know, 40 minutes by myself on a Friday. So hopefully this gives you guys something to fill your weekend with. Again, thank you to Tony Gill. Follow him at the Tony Gill on Twitter. Check out his podcast, Sports Uncovered. The series that he's doing alongside and everybody else at NBC Sports Chicago. The first episode was his. You'll hear him narrating throughout, and he was kind of the, like I was saying, the conductor or the maestro of the entire episode. So it was amazing. And if you haven't checked out Behind the Headlines, the short documentary series podcast that's still available on James Jordan's murder, you should definitely catch that too. That was dropped a little over a year ago now. So thanks to everybody who listened to part one and part two. Thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the episode. Built Bar, $10 off at builtbar.com. Use the promo code Locked On. Again, 20 different flavors to choose from, and an additional $5 off until the 31st of May. So just a couple of more days. So get that extra $5 off each box, plus the $10 off using promo code Locked On at builtbar.com. For Jordan Malley, and thanks to my guest, Tony Gill, and Matt Peck, he'll be me and him will be back back next week for a bunch of new episodes, hopefully to have some brand new guests for you guys, and hopefully some good news from the NBA. Stay safe. Have a great weekend. For Jordan, Matt, and Tony, we are out. Deuces.
The whole world, look around. Look around you. Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. Look around at the square. I promise you right now, we did this. Doesn't matter what anybody says. They can say it's disrespectful. They can say it's this and that. Everybody's within the rules. Everybody's doing their thing. All we are is proud and passionate.
I want to get out of here.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com